us direct or collect, 386-1161, or on your cell at Star 1070. It's Movin' with Robin Farrell on CFAX 1070.
Welcome back to Move It. I'm Robin Farrell, and normally on this show, we talk about the importance of being healthy, but now we're going to talk about the importance of not overdoing it, because like anything else, it's possible to get obsessed about this kind of thing. Who knew? I'll tell you who, because she's right here. Hello, Michelle Moran from the Cedric Center, and thanks for being here.
Thanks, Robin.
So you're the director and founder of the Cedric Center, Michelle, so clearly you know everything. So tell us, what is the deal? Because you try to be healthy and eat all the right foods and stuff like that, but clearly are we going overboard sometimes?
Some people are, yes.
Sure.
Not necessarily everybody. I mean, there is a lot of energy put in our society these days on dieting and on being the right weight.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so there's a lot of pressure on males and females these days to be something other than what they are. But some people do take it that extra mile beyond that and really get preoccupied with health and wellness to the point that it really becomes an unhealthy obsession.
Because you hear about things like we know of anorexia nervosa, which is, you know, the extreme non-eating or eating very small bits to sustain yourself only.
Right.
But I was reading an article where you were talking about orthorexia nervosa. Is this the clinical name for the obsession with healthy eating?
Yeah. Well, officially, orthorexia isn't in the diagnostic manual for psychiatric disorders. However, it is something that people who work in the mental health field have been talking about for quite some time, and it is a term that's referred to often. And what it really means is somebody who's taking the concept of healthy eating too far, and they're restricting themselves in terms of caloric content and kinds of food. It's really another form of anorexia. It's just that the person is really using the veil of eating healthy and being preoccupied with health as a way of sanctioning their extreme restriction.
So how do you know if somebody has this? Like, what are you looking for? If somebody comes into the Cedric Center, what are some of the signs that you could tell that perhaps you're getting over the edge?
Well, some of the main indicators would be that somebody's just extremely preoccupied with eating healthy. Meaning if it's a choice between not eating anything for long periods of time or eating something that might not be organic or that might have maybe a little bit of a higher fat content or maybe even be a processed or refined carbohydrate, someone with orthorexia won't even consider it.
So I ate some cookies today, so I'm okay.
You're good.
Yeah. Okay. That's good to know. So that's kind of what you're looking for, though, is somebody that is really willing to give up all sort of fun foods or, you know, something that wouldn't be considered a healthy food.
Right. Yeah. So somebody with orthorexia certainly wouldn't have any processed or refined carbohydrates or sugars. That's just a given.
Okay.
But beyond that, they would probably start to kind of in ever increasing kind of tightening circles, restrict where certain foods come from. Just the kinds of things that they're eating would be very restrictive. So somebody who's got a real natural or healthy approach to food does try to limit the processed and refined carbs and sugars.
Sure, of course.
They're not really good for any of us.
Right.
But we'll have them in moderation from time to time and overall eat a well-balanced diet and doesn't suffer from a lot of guilt or a lot of some. They do eat those kinds of foods and will exercise moderately. Someone with orthorexia probably is also somebody that we would call an exercise bulimic, somebody who's very preoccupied with exercise and who feels an awful lot of guilt and self-judgment, you know, bordering on anxiety and panic attacks when they don't get to exercise as much as they think they should, and has the same kind of guilt and shame and anxiety response when they eat something or feel that they'll be in a situation where people will expect them to eat something that they're not comfortable with.
Because it's about control, right? It's about feeling like wanting to feel like you're in control and then something happening, either, you know, eating an unhealthy type of food or exercising or not exercising enough or feel like you're not exercising enough that leads to that sort of thing and wanting to get the control back.
Well,
that right?
Yeah, you're on to it. There's a way to go. There's a piece beneath that I think is really important, because a lot of times people get hooked into the concept of the control aspect. And then somebody who might be listening who struggles with this issue will say, well, no, I'm not about mm-hmm. control, or there's more to it than that, or you know, it just won't feel like an accurate description. I think something that's a fuller way of explaining it is talking about the fact that people who need any sort of rigid control or structure around anything in their lives are coming at that particular aspect of their life from a place of a real sense of a lack of confidence and security in themselves. And this particular focus, in this case, healthy eating, mm-hmm. is the way that this particular individual is choosing to try and feel a sense of security and a sense of confidence and to really have a sense of knowing something about themselves or an identity for themselves. Just as other people might choose drugs or alcohol, mm, sure. or some people might overeat.
Right. So is this, though, a harder one to diagnose because of that reason? Like, is it, you know, because you see people, you think, oh, well, they're eating healthy, they're doing fine, at least they're putting food into their body, but really something else is going on. Does it become harder to diagnose or harder to realize that maybe you have a problem about it?
It might be harder for people outside of that individual, but that individual will know in themselves, whether they might not want to see it or acknowledge it,
sure.
but they will, just by asking themselves, you know, how anxious or how guilty do I feel when I eat certain things? Because if the choices I'm making about what I eat are coming from a place of genuine concern for health and wellness, mm-hmm. first of all, I'm not going to often feel drawn to have things that aren't good for me. But when I do, I'm going to appreciate that in moderation, it's not a big deal. And I'm not going to feel a lot of guilt and shame or really get caught up in feeling anxious and needing to plan for how I'm going to deal with the fact that I just had some pasta or a piece of bread or something that isn't organic.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Michelle, do you think, in your professional opinion, does media and what we see on television and in magazines and things like that, I mean, clearly all of those kinds of things contribute to how young women, perhaps particularly, but also young men as well, sort of view their own images or feel like they're supposed to look. Is this something now, because we've become such a health-conscious society, that, you know, maybe now people are sort of going to the other extreme instead of going, you know, and hiding and you know, sticking fingers in our throats, you know, to say it mm-hmm. in maybe not such a nice way, but versus now actually just, you know, making sure that you don't eat anything bad, mm-hmm. you know, put anything bad in quotations, I'll use mm-hmm. that, you know, in your body, and therefore going to the other extreme. Is it something that's being ingrained again through society, but just in a different way?
Well, I think the question you're asking is the kind of the societal preoccupation with
health. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And I mean, of course, there's great awareness now, which, I mean, it's so obvious and mm-hmm. so intuitive that you are what you eat. So,
sure.
of course, being concerned that you're eating well overall is a very important thing. You know, it's the best thing that you can do mm-hmm. that, as well as getting moderate exercise and adequate rest and, you know, limiting your stress. Those are the things that you can actively do, or anyone can actively do, create the greatest likelihood of longevity and best life for yourself. But separate from that, yes, media messages and messages we receive from peers and family really do play a big part in the sense that eating certain things are good and eating other mm-hmm. things are bad. And depending on how, again, back to that about confidence and security in oneself, depending on how much someone believes that they are a good person, that they are a person who is worth love and acceptance, who is deserving of care and worthy of taking up space in the planet.
Right.
If somebody feels those positive things about themselves or has what we call high esteem,
mm-hmm.
they're not going to be as easily hooked into those messages that you have to eat this or have to look like this in order to be acceptable.
Right.
But somebody who hasn't received those messages of positive reinforcement or really questions whether they're worthy or deserving of love and acceptance or the career that they want or the guy or the girl that they want,
sure.
is going to be a lot more prone to believe the messages that what you look like or what you wear or what kind of hair you have is going to be a big indicator of your overall success. And so that's often what happens is, you know, people who are struggling with self-esteem concerns because of other areas in their lives mm-hmm. where they haven't had that positive reinforcement really get hooked into seeing what they look like or their body, their physical form as who they are. And so if their physical form isn't perfect, then they aren't lovable. And that becomes
right.
a true, it really does feel like a genuine threat to that person's security and place in the world.
And that's really, is that really the underlying notion that's for all eating disorders?
Exactly. Right. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just manifests in different ways for different people.
I was thinking about that, you know, as we were talking about setting up this interview, and I was just thinking to myself, interesting, though, that, I mean, maybe there's been a shift in society where, you know, we were told as women at one point we were supposed to be thin to be mm-hmm. beautiful, and now we're mm-hmm. supposed to be healthy to be beautiful. And right. But being healthy is good.
Right.
But then at what point does it shift?
Right.
Oh!
Well, and what's one's definition of health? Our sure. society still perceives healthy as having practically no body fat, having no tummy whatsoever. You know, and the average female form who just eats naturally, eats when they're hungry, stops when they're full, exercises moderately, and has a balanced life, is going to have a curve or two.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely.
That's really healthy, and you know, that's the way
I
you're meant
curve,
to be.
Michelle,
you
I have a curve, Michelle. I have a curve. Hilarious. Okay, Michelle Moran, director and founder of Victoria Cedric Center, is here helping us make sure we don't get too obsessive about our healthy eating habits. When we come back, what can we do about it if we are counting carrots? More Move It in a minute after these.
We now return to Move It with your host, Robin Farrell, on CVAX 1070.
We're back on Move It with Michelle Moran, director and founder of the Cedric Center here in Victoria. We've been talking about orthorexia nervosa, which is the obsession with healthy eating. Michelle, most of us want to sneak food, but it's usually not carrots. So is this a hard type of eating disorder to break? Like, does it give us the most resistance when we're trying to correct it?
No.
Okay.
All eating disorders give resistance when we're trying to correct them, just, again, as with the use of alcohol or drugs to cope. So the readiness of the individual, the person who struggles with these issues really has to want to change.
Okay.
Even if they don't know how, that's where we come in at the Cedric Center or other counselors, is the how and the tools for how to change. But somebody really has to really have had enough of this particular issue and, in essence, have this sense in their head, I want my life back.
So it's like quitting anything, really. It's like having any kind of addiction, same right. with, you know, smoking, drugs. It's that you have to want to do it before
yeah.
it's time.
We have to recognize how it's taking over, how it's impacting our quality of life, how it's preventing us, you know, issues like this to do with food really prevent us from even having a good time out at dinner with our best friend or our significant other. We can't stop to just enjoy the conversation or even pay attention to the conversation because we're so preoccupied with what's on the menu and what we're allowed to have and not allowed to have. And, you know, can we really ask for what we really want, or are people going to stare at us? And what if we eat all of it? How much should we eat? And what are they eating? And all this preoccupation that makes it, I haven't even heard a word you've said over the meal
right.
because I've been so obsessed with this.
It's so tough.
Yeah.
That is tough. Now, what can we do if we know somebody has an issue like this? Like, if there's somebody in your life that you know is dealing with something like that, I mean, mm-hmm. how do you approach them to say, mm-hmm. maybe you need some help?
Well, that's a really good question, and it's really hard. I mean, there is a straight answer for that, but it's not an easy thing to do. And that is to let that person know that you see certain patterns of behavior that concern you. And just ask them the question, you know, how are you feeling about your relationship with food and about your body? Does it feel a bit more stressful than you'd like? And would you like some support?
Fair enough. What sort of services do you provide then at the Cedric Center? Like when you have somebody that walks in the door mm-hmm. with these kinds of issues, what's the first thing that kind of happens?
Well, it really depends on the individual. We have a lot of different ways that we can support someone. We have a book and CDs and DVDs so people can do a kind of a self-exploration option. Or we have workshops and we have individual counseling. And we have a number of other adjunct services such as body work and yoga that are meant to really help people to connect with their body in a life-enhancing way. So we have a workshop coming up actually the weekend of July 24th through 26th. Mm-hmm. That's a 3-day event. We call it our intensive weekend workshop. And it's a full 3 days in a group setting. And I'm facilitating that to just really help people to understand why they do what they do with food and to give them real concrete and clear tools and teach them how to use them so that at the end of the weekend, people can actually respond differently to food and just in the world.
I was going to say, because I was looking online, cedriccenter.com is the website, by the way. So if you go there, you'll see the workshop up there, and it actually says that, yeah, you'll introduce them to tools
yeah.
that, you know, people can actually use that are practical. So you could walk away from the workshop and actually feel better. Like, actually feel like you are able to tackle it from a different perspective.
Absolutely. And you will have practical experience in the workshop of seeing yourself using the tools and seeing how well they work. So that part in each of us who uses food to cope, who really feels helpless and feels like they're the one person for whom this isn't going to work, really can see in that first day of the workshop how it does work for them and how they can make change.
So also resources, like you mentioned, the book and the CD. So this is a book that you've written. It's called Food is Not the Problem, Deal with What Is.
Yeah.
This is the underlying problem when you're dealing with an eating disorder, yeah?
Yeah. Well, the problem is that people think food is the problem.
Sure.
So whether it's orthorexia or overeating or bulimia or anorexia, it doesn't matter. It's that people get really hooked into focusing on food and body image. And so they just keep spinning their wheels, focusing on what we call the coping strategy, which is those behaviors around food, and don't ever stop to ask themselves, okay, why am I doing this in the first place? How did I get so preoccupied with food and body image that it's taking over my life? And that's the question that we answer in that first day of the workshop or in the first few chapters of the book that really help people to understand, oh, I totally get why I do this. And now the next question is, okay, what now? And that's what the rest of the workshop or book is about, or any of our individual counseling as well.
Who counsels with you? And I ask this because, are they people themselves that have experienced eating disorders or dealt with eating disorders in the past? Because quite often centers like this will have counselors that have firsthand experience, which for a lot of people coming to the center would be extremely important.
Mm-hmm. That's right. There are two other counselors that work with me at the center, as well as I mentioned, the body worker and the yoga teacher. And they've all had their own personal experience with the use of food to cope, either through restriction or overeating. Myself, I'm a recovered chronic dieter and binge eater, and I talk about that very freely on the blog and in the book and in my workshops, and I'm always happy to answer questions. And so the process that I teach people and that I created and that became the program we offer at the center is the same process that I went through to heal my use of food to cope and to get to a place where I have a thing we call that natural relationship with food. Eat when you're up, when you're full, no guilt, no shame, natural weight for your body without dieting or exercise.
And you can fully do that now, like after, recovering and now being completely fine with it.
Yeah, because I came to understand what it was that was making me eat when I wasn't hungry. And as soon as I figured that out and realized that there were other things I could do to attend to those stressors or those situations or those thoughts that I was having that weren't about using food to cope, but that actually were helpful, then it just became such a no-brainer that I just naturally started to do those more life-enhancing coping strategies and let go of the food.
And are the programs for both women and men?
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming probably mostly women is still who you see.
Yeah, we love to work with men, absolutely. And they're certainly welcome at the workshop as well, although probably about 90% of our client population now is female.
And how old or how young, I guess, I guess what my question is what is the range of people that you see?
Well, at the Cedric Center, we start working with clients around the age of 13, although there are clients that are younger that need support. It's just not our forte to work with younger clients. And we'll have clients up into their 60s and 70s. So it's quite a wide range. And at the workshops or, any of the groups that we offer, we'll see all those ages represented and all different issues around food represented. And it works really well because people find out within about the first hour of the workshop as we go around and we just talk about what brings us there and what we're hoping to get out of the workshop. People discover instantly that everybody is there for the same reason.
Michelle, now as a counselor, but having been through an eating disorder yourself or a form of it, when people walk through the door or, what's the first message that you really want them to know?
That there's nothing wrong with you. That you do what you do with food for a reason. And the question to ask yourself is, what is the reason? And what stops people from moving forward in their healing is that they get hooked into thinking that there's something fundamentally wrong with them, and there isn't.
Fair enough. Do you see relapse behavior as well?
Well, part of the process of healing is that it's not a straight line.
Sure.
The most widely accepted model for the process of lasting change has relapse as one of the key steps, where we get a certain level of awareness and competency, and then something happens. It kind of, it kicks us off, sets us off our game. It can be something for people who use food to cope. something that we call a relapse can be, you know, having a week without binging, for example, or somebody with orthorexia can have, you know, a week without being overly preoccupied with eating certain kinds of things and then have a stressful experience and finding themselves starting to restrict again for a day or two and then start to slowly work their way back with the tools.
And if somebody is out there listening right now that feels like they might have these kinds of issues, but they are afraid or they don't know how to ask for help or what to really do about it. What sort of advice, I guess, would you give?
Well, the wonderful thing about our world these days is this thing called the internet.
Yes.
Right? Because it allows this huge amount of anonymity and safety as you explore, you know, different resources that are out there. So what I would suggest is that somebody visit our website at cedriccenter.com. We have a free newsletter which you can sign up for, and nobody needs to know you're getting it. It comes out online through into your email. We have a blog that you can visit that's got lots of free tools and information and articles about healing, and clients write in and talk about their successes and their stories so people can have a chance to read about that. So I would say if anybody listening feels that this might resonate or might be an issue for them or someone they know and they want to find out a bit more without really outing themselves or feeling too vulnerable, visiting the website and just really getting a sense of all of the different things we have to offer. There's some self-checklists and things like that on there as well. So it's a really safe way. There's just tons of info.
That's fantastic. Yeah, check that out for sure. Cedriccenter.com. I wanted to ask you about how important a support system is with something like this in terms of family or friends. You know, again, this is often an issue that people want to hide. So in that respect, is it important or is it necessary to have a good network around you when you're going through something like this? Or can you do it on your own if you need to?
If you, you absolutely can do it on your own, and many, many people are very much on their own because they've isolated themselves as a result of their behaviors, or, you know, some, maybe some of the issues that led them to use food to cope in the first place have caused isolation. So it's not necessary to have family and friends or your significant other involved in your healing process. It certainly does help to have a sense that there are people that you can trust and really be vulnerable and real with. But it's not, you don't need that, and you don't certainly have to start there. You can, you know, there's so much shame and such a sense of stigma within the person who uses food to cope. It's a lot to ask that they kind of come out to their friends and family right away. So we don't need it or expect it.
But, yeah, obviously, if that's available to you and people are.
It is ideal, you know, and sometimes people will come in with their best friend for the first session or their partner or their parent or, you know, or, you know, maybe a couple of friends will come in together and start doing the work. But a lot of times people are just coming in on their own, and sometimes nobody knows, and other times they just completely told everybody, and it just, it, there's no right or wrong. It's just where you're at.
Fair enough. So if you are having food issues, please don't be afraid to ask for help. And obviously, Michelle Morand and the Cedric Center are a fantastic place to start. So again, Michelle, if people want to find out more, contact you, get involved in this workshop that's coming up July 24th, right?
Yeah, it's a full weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 10 to 6 each day. It's, we call it intensive for a reason because it's three full days, but it's really transformative.
Amazing. So, and again, the book and the CD also available online. So definitely check those out. CedricCenter.com?
Yes.
Oh, Michelle Morand, fantastic. Thanks so much for coming today.
Thanks very much for having me.
Okay, we made it through another show, so yay us. Thanks for hanging out with me again on Move It. I'm Robin Farrell. I'm here Sundays at 5 with topics that will get us going. So if there's anything you want to hear about that's health or fitness or lifestyle, sport, or sex-related, cfax1070.com. My email's on there. Send me a note, and I'll sort it. We'll talk next week, yeah? Until then, move it or lose it. It's true.